Well, good morning again, and happy Mother's Day again. And we are one with the heart of the mother, with the heart of love. We are one with the heart of the father. Though we have many names and images for God, certainly that parental image is the most prevalent. And we'd have to say the paternal parental one has been the most prevalent for a lot of millennia, probably. It's changing. I think you'll find in a lot of churches today, in any denomination, you'll probably be able to go in and hear a talk about the motherhood of God. I hope so, anyway. I think it's shifting. But Unity has been using the term Father, Mother, God since its inception in the late 1800s, because the Fillmores were inspired by a number of people, including the founder of Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy, who preferred that term way back then. And, you know, it's great to be able to use both terms because we're acknowledging that divinity encompasses and surpasses any kind of gender, or it also conveys aspects of masculinity and femininity, strength and wisdom, compassion and caring. But any name is a kind of a box, is it not? Whether it's of God or one another or anything. And we like to be able to say we know what this is, and I'm going to put it right here on this shelf, and then I won't really have to think about it again because I know what that is. We've been doing that since the Garden of Eden. You know, that was Adam and Eve's first job, is to label everything. We like to think that we know what things are and thus who we are in relation to them. So, of course, we do the same thing with God. We try to pare down and delineate and fit it on our shelf. I think maybe that's why the Jewish people, they're a little wiser. In fact, wisdom is one of their names for God. It's a feminine name, Sophia in Greek, or Chokmah in Hebrew. And they don't like to write out the name of God as they understand it or speak it. There's some wisdom there, and also true in the Taoist tradition. That word Tao, they don't say that means God necessarily, but it certainly has divine attributes. Listen to this section, this passage from the Tao Te Ching. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The nameless is the origin of heaven and earth. The named is the mother of the 10,000 things. There was something undifferentiated and yet complete which existed before heaven and earth. Soundless and formless, it depends on nothing and does not change. It operates everywhere and is free from danger. It may be considered the mother of the universe. I do not know its name. I call it Tao. We come into this world kind of soul blind. We don't know who we are. We don't know where we are. We don't know what anything is. Fortunately, we have mothers and fathers to help us understand and acclimate ourselves to the world. But think about in the early days of civilization, it had to be disconcerting. Like, why are we here? Who am I? So what do people do? They start making names for things to box them in and feel safer, right? If I have an idea, if I think I know what something is, then I don't have to worry about it so much anymore. We are, as Meister Eckhart said, the great German mystic, God is at home and we are in the far country. Right? Lately, I've come upon a new term that I really like for God or Source. I find it's helpful for me in getting past those ingrained images that I have for God, and it doesn't feel at all boxy. It actually feels kind of Taoist. I realized that as I was putting this talk together. and the phrase is the divine field. The divine field. It's like it said in the Tao Te Ching, it's undifferentiated and yet complete. It's not delineated like a regular field by a fence or a boundary. It's boundaryless. It encompasses everything. It's kind of fuzzy. In fact, I entitled my talk, "The Divine Field, God is Fuzzy." You know, I still will need to employ these ideas of God as Father, Mother. In my prayer, I often will pray to the Father or to Jesus. But I'm finding in meditation, this idea of just being immersed in the divine field is very powerful. As it turns out, thinking about it, divine field feels like a very feminine image for God. It's womb-like, right? It encompasses and envelops all. We have come from the divine field, I would say, into this life. And I think we believe that when we exit this life, we return to God or the divine field. But the divine field encompasses all. We can never be separate from it while we're here in this world of separation. The mother, yours and mine, the archetypal mother figure, I think is like the prime agent for God, for the divine in this world. I mean, think of the miracle of birth and gestation. If we're going from this place of complete oneness, complete peace, unconditional love, and we're having to migrate to this world as it is, this is not always that way, I'd have to say. The mother becomes the agent for that field, encompasses us in the womb, creates this oceanic experience for us where we don't experience a separation. Every need is taken care of. We're actually even physically connected to that being. For 9 months in the beginning, if conscious, I don't know when consciousness really begins to reside there, but in the beginning, it's a big ocean. And we gradually begin to hear the sound of our mother, sound outside the mother. As we're welcomed into this world, the delivery room maybe is a bit jarring, but we're back into the mother's arms. And she carries us in those early days and months and years into this. Well, I don't know when, maybe there's an educational psychologist or a student of psychology who could tell when is the moment when the child begins to learn that they're separate from the mother. And it takes a little bit of time, I think. But then, you know, you have to begin to learn, oh, that's my father, right? You begin to have to experience these 10,000 things that you're encountering. First, there's just a few, right? And they keep adding up. We're told, that is a bird. This is your nose. This is my nose. That's your teddy bear. Think about the teddy bear. It's fuzzy. It's another, I think it is, for a very young child, another aspect of the divine. Think how close children are to that teddy bear, whatever fuzzy animal they might sleep with, right? We're told that's your brother. That's your father. Then we're told, no, that's your brother's toy. And then this other thing starts creeping in. What, everything isn't mine anymore? Like, how come he, you know? And, you know, then what happens? I have two little granddaughters, and when they come to visit and they're playing on the floor, sometimes Marianne's over here with the thing she likes to play with, and Gloria's over here with hers, and they're looking back and forth and eyeing each other's toys, right? And what's essentially, they're building walls. They're delineating like we do. And do I need to say much more about that? You know, it's like, she took my toy! They snuck into our country. right? Yeah. So this experience of separation, this gradual, these feelings that come up of fear, of loss, of betrayal and jealousy, they become the big stumbling blocks for us to re-experience that fuzzy feel of the divine. The intellect is very indispensable for us. We need it to navigate this world. But what's the world that's helping us navigate? It's the world of separation. It's the world of duality. It's not the world of oneness that somewhere in our depth of our being we know is ours. A Course in Miracles says, in any state apart from heaven, life is illusion. At best, it seems like life. At worst, like death. Heaven is actually all there is or can be. If it doesn't feel like heaven, then it's being misperceived and thus illusory. There's some deception involved. And it comes into play with those things, of those feelings of loss and fear and stress and anxiety. They kind of rob us of that. You might take issue with this idea that we live in an illusion, but in fact, science is telling us the same thing now, has been for some time. The brain tells us that the world is made up of solid matter. We're solid matter. Sometimes not so solid, but... You know. But quantum science says there is no matter at all. Everything is energy. An early quantum physicist, Niels Bohr, said, everything we call real is made of things that cannot be regarded as real. I mean, it's taken us 100 years sitting with that, and, you know, we're still... It's just a message that's... It's really hard to grasp. It's a mental universe. Really? Yeah. Another physicist, John Wheeler, said, when we seem to experience an external world that's out there, independent of us, it's something we dream up. I think it's cool that the New Thought movement in the early 20th century, including the Fillmores, kind of got this. They realized what's happening in the world is happening in the mind. And we can change it there. I pick up this piece of paper. I hear it. I feel it out here in front of me. No, I actually, it's in my consciousness. Where are you experiencing everything that's happening in this room right now? In this room? No, it's actually happening. It's actually a conscious experience, not a physical one. It's purely mental. God is mind. We, as an aspect of God, are mind. Creation is just the movement of the God of that is mind. But what about the brain? Isn't the brain the mind? Well, remember we have two brains, the right brain and the left brain, right? There's a brain scientist, Jill Bolte Taylor, who made a startling discovery of the differing functions. She knew this on paper, but she had a left brain hemorrhage. Imagine a brain scientist being able to do that kind of research, right? She had a left brain hemorrhage, which means it wasn't doing anything. And she had to be in the hospital, of course, and she was there. She had this experience for days. You can hear her TED talk about it. But what she discovered when the left brain shut down is that it turned off her ego mind, that voice that's always yakking in the background. It turned off stress and it turned off fear. She was left with a feeling of nirvana, of oneness with everything else. She said, because I could not identify the position of my body in space, I felt enormous and expansive, like a genie just liberated from the bottle. And my spirit soared free like a great whale gliding through the sea of silent euphoria. came to the conclusion, it makes sense that the right brain connects us to the mind that we are, is our kind of way into this world and our way back into that essence. But the left brain has this weird job of stepping it all down into this backlot sound and light stage that we call reality to help us navigate this world of illusion, if you will, or duality. So it's a liar, frankly. I mean, it's a wonderful thing, and it's brought us to a great kind of civilization that we have now. But ultimately, it tells us untruths. And it's funny how quantum science is beginning to kind of peel that back and see that. Taylor puts it this way at the conclusion of her talk. She says, right here, right now, I can step into the consciousness of my right hemisphere, where we are. I am the life force power of the universe. I am the life force power of the 50 trillion beautiful molecular geniuses that make up my form at one with all that is. Or I can choose to step into the consciousness of my left hemisphere, where I become single, individual, solid, separate from the flow, separate from you. She realized in having this experience that you can begin to make the choice of putting the left brain to sleep for a while by, you know, spiritual exercises, actually, meditation, and engaging the right brain more, maybe through creative endeavors as well, and experiencing that. You know, when you think about it, the way she described her experience, she said, I could not identify the position of my body in space. I felt enormous and expansive. Well, she was feeling the fuzziness of God, the fuzziness of herself. No boundaries, no delineated form. That's who we are. One with everything. The divine field, the mother, part of the mother. You are permanently overshadowed by that divine field of love, in which all of creation is gently and permanently enfolded. So my advice to myself and to each of us is to, on a daily basis, is to yield to the field. Yield to the field. I'm going to make a bumper sticker. People say, what are you talking about? The mystics and the spiritual teachers of the past all told us about this. They didn't need a left brain hemorrhage. They found a way to experience it. They gave us tools to help us, tools of prayer and meditation, tools of right living. All of the spiritual traditions give us another tool, and I think it's an essential one. It's the golden rule, right? To do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Because what's happening there is you're remembering that you are me and I am you. That we're part of this jewel, we're just a facet, just a focal point of the infinite. And we're all one. We begin to heal relationships that way. That's the way to get us back into the experience of that oneness. Because the relationships started to be undone in our childhood, in those moments I was talking about, jealousy, betrayal, fear, separateness. That's where we need to make the change, to do the process of forgiveness if that's needed, but to begin to recognize the oneness that is here among us. So I'm going to close with this wonderful poem of Rumi's. You've probably heard it before. In fact, I've heard others reference it here in their talks, and it's this: out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, that would be the world of duality, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Remember, the Tao that can be named is not the eternal Tao. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. This is the dream. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are going back and forth across the door sill where the two worlds touch. Left and right brain, maybe. The door is open and round. Don't go back to sleep. I'll leave it there, and I'll have an affirmation we can use this week to help us ground this a bit. I am one with all that is, a focal point of the infinite, a manifestation of divine mind. Let's sit with that for a moment. Kind of take that in. And we'll say it together. I am one with all that is, a focal point of the infinite, and a manifestation of divine mind. So it is, and so we are. Thank you.